The fruit of the pawpaw has been described as tasting like a creamy blend of papaya, banana, mango, and pineapple. It sounds exotic, but you can grow it in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. If you're interested in planting something a little out of the ordinary, like a pair of pawpaw trees, or maybe you want to try your hand at aronia berries, Patrick O'Malley of Iowa State University Extension will be here to talk about it today. He'll talk about growing some of the more unusual fruit crops in Iowa. Horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Patrick will answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in a few minutes, horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will be here to answer your questions. But we're going to start the hour by talking about some of the more exotic fruits you can grow in Iowa. Patrick O'Malley is here today. He's the commercial horticulture specialist for Eastern Iowa with Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for coming in today. And we're going to start with the pawpaw, which sounds really exotic, but it is it's a native tree in the United States, right?
Well, yes and no. The pawpaw is it's a dessert fruit. It's a sweet fruit. Its relatives are all tropical. They can't grow in Iowa, like soursop, sweet sop, cherimoya are all its close relatives. But it does grow successfully here in Iowa, probably more so in the southern two-thirds than the northern third.
Yeah, I was looking at a map of the places where it grows in the United States, and Iowa wasn't actually on that map. but there are parts of Iowa that are well-suited.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say south of Highway 20 for sure. North of Highway 20, you're looking at the tree will most likely survive, but it may or may not produce fruit.
So what does the tree look like?
It's a smaller tree. It's got simple entire leaves that are somewhat similar to magnolia leaves, maybe not quite as glossy, but very similar to magnolia. The trees normally don't get very big. If they're in full sun, you're looking at a tree maybe 10, 15 feet at the most in height at maturity. If they're in the shade and they can actually tolerate full shade or nearly full shade in a forest situation, they'll get taller, but they won't get as wide. And so they'll get maybe 20, 25 feet. But normally, if they get a decent amount of sun, they'll have kind of a pyramidal shape and be about 10 to 15 feet in height.
When you plant a pawpaw, can you plant just one, or do you need more than one for pollination?
For the most part, pawpaws are like apples, where it's best to have two different cultivars or two different seedling plants to cross-pollinate each other because they've got perfect flowers. Each flower has male and female parts, but they have an incompatibility system that they can't pollinate themselves.
Okay. And how long or how old does a pawpaw tree have to be before it starts bearing fruit?
Usually you're looking in the area of like 5 to 6 years before they will start to bear fruit. There's an interesting story about the flower, too, is it has a kind of a burgundy red flower that comes out in the spring, usually slightly before the leaves, and has kind of an ornamental effect. It's a pendulous flower, kind of hangs down, looks sort of like a bell shape almost. But again, it's got the burgundy color. But it's in the literature, they claim that it's got a slight aroma like rotting meat.
Lovely.
But in reality, I have yet to ever detect that in the flowers. But one of the pollinators is the carrion fly, which oftentimes will go after roadkill.
Okay. and then what does the fruit look like?
The fruit is it's almost a mango shaped, and some of them can be as big as what you'd see in a supermarket mango, sometimes a little bit smaller than that, usually a little bit smaller than that. But they're, like I say, they're a dessert fruit. They've got a thin green skin on them. For the most part, you don't want to really eat the skin because it has kind of a little sort of a bitter taste to it. But once you peel the thin skin or just cut it in half, you scoop out the flesh, and it's got a kind of a creamy yellowish to whitish colored flesh that's sweet, and it's hard to describe the flavor. Some of the terms I've heard used would be vanilla-like, melony, banana, cinnamon.
Right. So I've heard lots and lots of terms to describe it. You actually brought a visual aid today of a pawpaw. Is it time for pawpaws to be ripe? Is this? harvest season?
In that so-called elusive normal year, this would be the heart of pawpaw season.
Okay, well, we did not have a normal year. So.
Right. So now we're basically at the tail end of the season now. We're in a normal year, it's pretty much the last 3 weeks of September, maybe a week into October.
Okay. How did pawpaws do this year, given the drought conditions?
For the most part, pretty good. The main planting that I have is down in Louisa County, which touches Johnson County in the southeast. And that one, that happened to be one of the garden spots of Iowa this year. The parts of Louisa County got fairly decent rain. But despite that, it was still less than normal. And the fruit size was down, where normal fruit might be somewhere in the neighborhood about 6-7 ounces. This year, probably the normal fruit was more like about 5 ounces.
And, of course, a lot of fruit crops were taken out by that frost that we had, that late frost that we had after that early warmth. How did pawpaws do?
For the most part, they escaped. My main plantings, I've got one in Iowa City and like one down in Louisa County, they were pretty much unaffected. I think the Louisa County one maybe had 20-30% loss of fruit, but not too bad. I know another grower in Louisa County that did lose most of his crop of pawpaw. He was kind of a site that was a little more frost prone, but essentially, though, they did better than apple this year.
Well, apples didn't do particularly well this year, though. Are pawpaws getting to be more popular in Iowa?
I think so. As more people start growing them, we do have several growers across the state that have got them in the ground, and I think you'll start seeing them more and more in the farmers markets, in particular, sometimes in the grocery stores.
Yeah. Are you a fan?
Yeah. I like the fruit. I have to admit that once several years ago, I maybe overindulged on the fruit and it kind of tempered me a little bit. I wouldn't recommend eating 10 or 12 fruit at one time.
Okay. That sounds like good advice. Let's talk about some of the other minor fruit crops that we can grow in Iowa. And one of them is the aronia berry. Tell me about that.
Yeah, the aronia berry has had a really strong push over the last, say, 5-6 years. I would estimate that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 150, 200 acres at least in the ground here in Iowa so far of aronia berries. And it's really a unique berry. We do like to call it aronia berry. It does have another name, which we're trying to kind of get rid of.
Oh, which is?
It's called chokeberry.
Okay, but it's not the same as choke cherries, right?
Right. Chokeberry is the aronia. The choke cherry is in the prunus family. It's related to plum. And we think of the choke berry, which aronia is. For years before it became popular as a fruit, it's a landscape plant. It's used quite a bit throughout the country, especially areas like Minneapolis use it a lot for landscaping. And so we think of the chokeberry more as a landscape form. And the berries, usually the landscape forms, aren't quite as good. And maybe I'll explain good in a little bit.
Okay. Well, and the aronia berry, what kind of area would it be comfortable in? What kind of conditions would you want to plant it in?
The aronia berry does seem to be pretty adaptable. Ideally, it would have a well-drained soil, a pH somewhere around 6.5, but I've seen it in all sorts of conditions where it does fairly well. You don't want to have it in a really wet area, and you don't want to have it on a sandy soil if you don't have the ability to irrigate it.
And what do the berries taste like?
Well, that's an excellent question. As fresh fruit, the berry, in my opinion, is not all that good. It has kind of an astringent taste to it. Maybe a bit, you could say maybe a little bit bitter. It's not really all that good fresh eating. There are some varieties like Viking, which are a little better flavored, and so you can eat it fresh, but it's you know, not going to be something tasty like a blueberry.
Okay, and so if you don't eat them fresh, what kind of applications would they be good in?
Okay, well, one thing you can do is you can freeze them. If you freeze them and take them out, it seems to improve the flavor, and then you can use it in things like baking as a substitute for blueberry, say in muffins or pies and so forth. And that's sort of the thing with the berry itself is that you might want to do something to it, like add sugar or some flavoring just to make it more palatable. But the thing that's really caught people's eyes on it is the fact that it's so high in antioxidants and nutrients, and so there's juices made of it. There's wines, aronia wines now, But it's got a lot of health benefits, and it's been proven. They've looked at these ORAC, ORAC values of it, and it shows that it ranks much higher than almost all the other fruits.
So it's even more of a super fruit than the blueberry, which people like to label blueberries that.
In comparison with a lot of these criteria that they use for antioxidants and nutrients and so forth, yeah, it does surpass blueberry.
So if I were looking at a commercial grower who is growing aronia berries, what would the field of aronia berries look like?
Aronia berries are more of a shrub, and so at maturity they could get as big as maybe 10 feet tall, 10 feet wide, but they're sort of like a honeysuckle or a lilac that you can just chop them down to the ground and just regrow them. And so you can kind of keep them tame and maybe a shorter height, easier to pick. For the most part, they're hand picked. The berries are. If you've got a really large scale operation, they actually have a system where you can modify a blueberry picker and mechanically harvest them.
It sounds like they're really tenacious. If you can cut them down to the ground and they grow back.
Well, they do sucker a little bit and. But they pretty much stay in the spot, more of a clump type shrub. But they're pretty easy to handle. Since we already talked about pawpaw. Here's a good comparison though: is you got a pawpaw tree and you got a aronia shrub right side by side. As they're little plants, just very narrow diameter stems, a rabbit might come along and chew off the pawpaw. It might chew off the aronia. As the stems get a little thicker, even say 3/8 of an inch, the rabbit will come by. It won't chew off the pawpaw. It will still chew off the aronia. As the plants get bigger, then we have the deer going after them. And the deer will take one bite out of a pawpaw shrub or pawpaw stem and realize it doesn't like it and will leave them alone. Where the aronia, they'll still go after. So the key here is if you got high deer pressure, aronia might be an issue if you don't fence them or do some sort of control method.
But it sounds like a pawpaw might be perfect.
Yeah, where the pawpaw, the deer will pretty much leave alone except for when they get at a certain height, the bucks may rub them in the fall. But other than that, they're not going to chew on them at all.
All right. I'm talking with Patrick O'Malley. He's the commercial horticulture specialist for Eastern Iowa with Iowa State University Extension. We've been talking about pawpaw and aronia berries, and he'll also answer your questions about other fruit crops in Iowa. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension Horticulture will also be joining us in a moment. Again, the number to call is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me is Richard Duran of Iowa State University. And Richard, you're in the studio with me today.
Yes,
what a treat.
I am. Good morning.
So you were in Iowa City last night doing a program for Master Gardeners?
Right.
Well,
right.
I'm delighted that you decided to stay so we can do the show face-to-face today. Patrick O'Malley is also with us. He's the commercial horticulture specialist for Eastern Iowa with Iowa State University Extension. And you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Alicia's on the line from Ottumwa. Hello, Alicia.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, basically, I am looking for a fruit or nut tree that can be planted kind of on a forest edge. And so something that's a little bit shade tolerant. And I'm just looking for ideas.
Patrick?
Well, hopefully you heard our earlier conversation because pawpaw would fit in real well with that. Probably the best location for it would be on the east side of a forest edge. Would be just absolutely perfect because it'd get the early morning sun and then it wouldn't get the late afternoon sun.
Okay. Are there any other things? I was wondering about figs maybe.
Well, how about a filbert possibly, the American filbert? It's a shrub, not really a tree. And if it gets, let's say, at least 4 to 6 hours of direct sun, it should be okay. So at the edge of a woods, they are a shrub. They do produce the little filberts. Now, if you grow those, the squirrels are quite fond of them, so you have to kind of beat them to the shrubs. But we can grow those typically in Iowa, the filberts.
Now, does filbert have a different name? That sounds familiar.
Hazelnut.
Hazelnut.
Hazelnut would be.
Okay, hazelnut. Okay, cool.
All right, Alicia, thanks a lot for your call.
All right, thanks.
You can join us at 866-780-9100. And we have this email from Josh in Iowa City. He said, can you please talk about the different characteristics of pawpaw cultivars? There are several available online. And then he named a few: Overlease, Tato, Mary, Johnson, and Sunflower. Which ones are best for Iowa and what's the difference?
They will have slightly different flavors with them. You mentioned Overlease is going to have a bigger fruit. As kind of a mild flavor, is probably the number one cultivar, at least in my trials. I've got a trial of these pawpaws and looked at them for several years. I would say the best ones are Shenandoah. It seems to be a reliable bearer year to year. It has not a real strong flavor, but it has a very pleasant flavor, no aftertaste. It's relatively low in seed count, but I would highly recommend that. I've got Sunflower. I'm not overly impressed with that one. It's okay. It does seem to be a good yielder. It's a little too seedy for me. Another one that I like is Susquehanna. What you may notice is there's kind of a trend here. Is a lot of the better pawpaw varieties are named after rivers out east in around West Virginia, Pennsylvania area. Another good one is Potomac. Of course, the Potomac River goes over by Washington, D.C. Potomac produces the biggest fruit of any of the cultivars that we have out there right now. The one downside to Potomac is sometimes there's a fungus that'll come along and maybe crack the fruit a little bit a few weeks prior to ripening. But if you don't have that fungus, and most of the time it doesn't happen, the Potomac is another good choice.
All right. And Don is on the line from Woodward. He's a pawpaw grower. Hey, Don.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I began growing pawpaws about 25 years ago, and I started with one tree, and theoretically they're supposed to be non-self-pollinating. Well, this one did self-pollinate, and I've got a whole grove of volunteer pawpaws. Some of the second generation is now 10 or 12 years old, and it's beginning to bear fruit too. I had a terrible year for pawpaws for production this year. They bloomed early, and then we got that late frost, and the frost just really nailed the blooms. So my production this year is about 25% of what I normally get. And again, I live in central Iowa, and you talked about the zone being below Highway 30. Well, I'd maybe put it closer to below Highway 20.
I did say Highway 20.
Yeah, he said Highway 20. But Don, so where do you sell your pawpaws?
I don't sell them. I give them to friends. Friends have made jam and jellies out of them. And I just my wife and I are both instructors, so we take pawpaws to our classes and give them around and things. There's also a trick to eating them. I mean, and you need some on-site learning for eating them. What you do is you split them in half. And then you stick that whole thing in your mouth, and you pull off the seeds inside of pawpaw are monster seeds. They're humongous seeds, and all the flesh sticks to the seeds. So what you got to do is put it in your mouth and really with your tongue and your teeth, pull all the flesh off the seeds. Then you spit the seeds out and you swallow the fruit. But it's really good. I love the fruit, and I can't tell you how much I love pawpaws, and I'm a real pawpaw fan.
All right, Don, thanks a lot for calling. And how about you, Patrick? How do you eat them?
Well, I would agree with Don. That's a good way to eat them. It sounds to me like he might have some of the more seedier types. The ones, like I mentioned, like Shenandoah, are less seedy. And so you can't actually scoop some out with a spoon without getting the seed. But, yeah, the preferred way to get all the flesh is to go ahead, scoop, you know, eat the seeds and get the flesh off the seeds as you're chewing it and spit out the seeds. Start a new pawpaw patch.
All right. Dan is on the line from Amana now. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I found a plant on my acreage while I was mowing grass a week or so ago, and it's about 4 or 5 feet tall, and it has bluish berries on it. They look like small blueberries. They're not elderberries. They're bigger than that. The The stalk's about an inch in diameter. It's a reddish-green stalk, and I was wondering if that's the aronia berries that he was talking about.
The actual fruit cluster, is it at the end of the stem?
Yeah.
Are they kind of reddish-purple in
color?
No,
they're a blue-purple, I would say.
Okay.
And you can squeeze them, with your fingers, and it just... They're very juicy and looks like grape juice, essentially.
Okay. Do they have fairly large leaves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm thinking that it's pokeweed. Pokeweed is a fairly common weed in Iowa. It dies back to the ground each winter, but it grows back. It's a perennial, and it can develop into like a small shrub or small tree.
Okay.
Supposedly the young... sprouts in the spring are edible if you cook them. Otherwise, they're considered poisonous. The roots, the foliage, the berries, they're typically considered poisonous. So even though supposedly you can harvest the young sprouts and cook them and eat them...
It's not really advisable.
I'm a little bit cautious about that.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Dan. And somebody else sent us an email. Mike sent us an email asking about pokeberries. He says, are these a fruit? Can you do anything useful with them? Should I let them grow? They're not unattractive. Sounds like they're not useful.
No. The actual plant with the berries is somewhat attractive. I mean, you have this plant. It's a fairly large shrub. And then you have these fruit clusters that are dark purplish and actually kind of attractive. But if you have children and young adults, you may want to get rid of them.
All right.
I could speak from personal experiences. I had a couple of pokeweeds on my property, and they flowered and had fruit. I found you don't ever want them to do that because the birds come out and they spread them around. Before long, 1 year I had like 2 plants, the next year I had 50 plants, and the next year I had like 100 plants.
Right. The berries, yeah, the birds love the berries, and they do a very good job of disseminating the seed, so...
Okay. Gail is on the line next in Marshalltown. Hello, Gail.
Good morning. I dug out a yucca more than a year ago, and I have tried to grow some things in the same area, and they just don't seem to survive. Does the yucca have something in its root system that contaminates the soil, so going to have problems growing things there?
Not that I'm aware of. And usually one attempt to kill a yucca plant, usually it's not sufficient. Usually it comes back from the root because they have a really deep taproot. But I don't believe it produces an allelopathic compound that would tend to inhibit the growth of nearby plants. I'm not aware of that. So,
okay, I may just have to dig out a bigger hole and put in some fresh dirt and all to see if that will take care of
the
problem.
Okay, probably should.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Tim on the line in Anamosa. Hello, Tim.
Good morning. I'm in rural Anamosa, probably 40 miles south of Highway 20. And a few years back, just on a lark, I planted 2 persimmon trees, getting back to the small fruit topic. And I don't know whether they're males or females. They're fenced off and protected from deer. They seem to be doing quite well, although they haven't flowered yet, and I'm just wondering what my chances are for a successful persimmon crop.
Well, if you have both a male and a female, that it's a pretty good bet that you could get it. Persimmons, like some of the other fruit trees, though, you may have got hurt by the spring freeze, so you should be able to tell by now whether you have actually fruit on the tree or not. Can you tell if you've got any?
Well,
right
they haven't flowered yet, so I don't really know if I have males or females.
Oh, okay, so they're younger trees.
Yeah, they're young.
Yeah. Well, again, your prospects are pretty good for the future. It's best to have a male and a female, but sometimes some of the males will have a little bit of female flowers, and sometimes the female trees sometimes may have a little bit of male flowers. But it's best to have the 2 trees for cross-pollination, and hopefully you've got a male and a female.
Well, I don't know much about persimmons. I was guessing I was right on the fringe of successful growing area, but I wondered about that. And if you could describe the fruit a little, because I'm just not familiar with it.
Okay. The fruit are sort of like a miniature version of the Asian persimmons that you'll find in the grocery store sometimes. The Asian ones are usually about 3-4 inches in diameter. The American persimmon is more likely going to be about an inch and a half, maybe an inch and 3/4 in diameter. It's got kind of a thin skin, kind of a soft flesh when it ripens. Sometimes it'll even wrinkle up a little bit when it ripens. But you need to really watch when you harvest it that it is fully ripe. That otherwise it's going to have kind of an astringent taste to it. But when it's fully ripe, it can be very sweet, a wonderful dessert fruit. They will usually have a couple smaller seeds inside. By smaller, I'm talking bigger, much bigger than apple, but smaller than a pawpaw seed, which can be over an inch in diameter.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot for your call. And Andrew from Des Moines also has a persimmon question for you. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm doing research at Drake University with Professor Nancy Ross concerning persimmon and its use across its native range. And my main question was, I don't know if any trials have been done at Iowa State or anywhere in the Midwest, Northern, how the persimmon tree fares through our somewhat more harsh winters than its natural southeastern range.
I've never really seen much, if any, winter damage to the persimmons, and I'm not sure how far north they can go. I know at least the southern half of Iowa is fine with the persimmons, and I think you could probably go to the northern part. You don't just seem to see as many trees up there, but as far as university research on persimmons, I'm not aware of anybody really doing that. There is some organizations like North America Fruit Explorers and some private individuals have done a lot of work with persimmon. The one that comes to mind best would be there's Jerry Lehman over in Terre Haute.
Yeah, actually, I've been working with him quite a bit through the Northern Nut Growers, and he's been a great resource for persimmon. But
yeah, he's sort of like the grandfather of persimmons. Here, more locally in Iowa, there's a nursery and a grower, Red Fern Farm, down.
Oh, excellent.
Are you familiar with him?
I'm not, no. I'll look into that.
Red Fern Farm over by Grandview, Iowa. In fact, I think their website is just like redfernfarm.com, C-O-M.
Excellent.
But he's done a lot of experimental work with persimmons, too.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Andrew. And next up, we'll go to Karen on the line in Carlisle. Hello, Karen.
Hello. I have a question about two different bushes. First of all, we just purchased a property, and we cleared off all the shrubs and everything. But I did want to save a lilac bush and a bridal wreath. They've been neglected for many, many years, and the lilac bush is probably 8 to 10 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and at the bottom, all of it's real woody and thick,
mm-hmm.
and I really want to save it. Would it be a good idea to just cut that off, clear the ground?
I prefer the more gradual approach where you would go out like in March of next year and maybe select maybe four or five of the biggest ones in width and cut those back to near ground level.
Okay.
And then the following year, maybe take out a few more. And do this over a period of maybe 3 or 4 years and gradually get rid of the older growth.
Okay.
Every time that you do that, that encourages new growth from the base.
Okay.
And after 3 or 4 years, you should have a younger plant that's much more vigorous, that flowers very nicely, should be a nice, healthy, attractive plant. As far as a bridal wreath, that's hard to do as far as to prune it back gradually. It's kind of a dense shrub, and I guess I'd be inclined to just go out there in March and cut it back to within like 3 to 4 inches of the ground. It'll come back very quickly. It's hard to kill a spirea. They're very tough. They're very resilient plants. So they'll come back, and by the end of summer, they'll probably be those plants maybe 4 or 5 feet tall.
All right, Karen, thanks a lot for your call. And we've got another Karen on the line from Des Moines who has a different opinion about the taste of aronia berries than you, Patrick. Hi, Karen.
Well, yes, I'm just calling to say that, you know, maybe in the past couple of months, I had gone to my local Hy-Vee, and there was a young man there, you know, with sampling the product. And he said it was aronia, which I'd never heard of. And I ended up buying it not because I knew anything about it, but because I was interested in supporting an Iowa industry. Apparently, this is says on the bottle here, Missouri Valley, and it's Heartland Berry Farms, and there's a bottle of concentrate. And it's not something I'd want to drink by itself, but he said, oh, you could add it to other, you know, mm-hmm. juice kind of drinks. So I happen to be a Crystal Light drinker because no calories, and I've been adding this to that, and there's enough, you know, sugar in that product to make this sort of like an additive, and I like the fact that it was an antioxidant, you know, rich in antioxidants, and so I bought it, and so I don't know if people know that it's available. And that's my comment.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Karen. And clearly this is something that's getting to be more and more available.
Right, right. I mean, it makes an excellent juice. Maybe I didn't point that out. She's absolutely right. It excellent juice, either by itself or mixed with other things. I think it's great. It's just the unadulterated raw berry itself is I'm not a big fan of.
All right. And that's okay, Patrick. You're entitled to your opinion and your taste. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Patrick O'Malley. He's the commercial horticulture specialist for Eastern Iowa with Iowa State University Extension. And horticulturist Richard Duran is here, also from Iowa State University Extension. They're here to answer your questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension, and also Patrick O'Malley, who's the commercial horticulture specialist for Eastern Iowa with ISU Extension. And you can join the conversation with your questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill is on the line next from West Des Moines. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
For Richard, last fall we planted 20 B&B conifers and 28 spaded 90 with a 90-inch spade, some swamp white oaks and some white oaks, and 25 container, like 24-inch container trees. And I was wondering about a fertilizer recommendation for next spring. I really don't want to do this, but my friend insisting that he thinks we need to do this. So,
okay, I guess I would disagree that most Iowa soils are quite fertile, that they can supply all the nutrients those trees need, and so typically there's no need to fertilize those trees. I would also add that if you do fertilize your lawn on a regular basis, you're indirectly fertilizing those trees. So I really don't see a need to do that. I'd be more concerned about making sure they're well watered, if at all possible. And I would keep on watering those into November if the weather's dry. And I wouldn't worry about the fertilization.
Okay, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. And we have a lot of questions about different kinds of berries today. This one is from Kathy. She says, my yew trees have red berries with little black seeds inside. Are they A, edible, B, poisonous, and can I start new yew trees from the seeds?
Actually, yeah, you can start new trees from the seeds, to answer the last question first. I've actually had a few wild ones show up on my property. As far as the edibility of the berry, that's the bottom line is don't eat them. But supposedly, the flesh itself is potentially edible, although I wouldn't recommend it. But it's the seeds that are very deadly poisonous.
Okay. Joe sent us his email from Boone. He says, for the cheapskates among us, can you recommend fruit or nut plants that we can grow from seeds or from cuttings? Can we, for example, grow blueberries from cuttings or pawpaw from seed?
Pawpaws can be grown from seed. What you need to do is get hold of some pawpaws, get their seeds out, clean them off, and we had a caller earlier mention about putting them in your mouth and sucking the flesh off. That's probably the best way to clean off the seeds. But you take those, and then you have to keep them moist, so you like wrap them in like a wet paper towel or a moist paper towel, and then put them in a plastic bag open, and then stick them in your refrigerator for 3 or 4 months to give them a cold treatment, and then go ahead and plant them in a pot or plant them outside, or alternatively, you could just plant them in the ground as long as you mark the spot and protect it from rodents and so forth. But pawpaws would be a good choice for growing from seed. Do you have some other suggestions?
Well, as far as anything like a cultivated variety, like an apple, a cherry, a peach, if you can actually germinate the seed, and you can get a tree to grow, but it's not going to be the same as the parent tree. So you could do that, and this apple tree, for example, may have lousy-tasting fruit. So it's really not a good idea. So they're typically propagated by either budding or grafting. Most fruit trees do not root very well from cutting, so it's typically more budding and grafting.
Okay.
I might add that peach, sometimes you can get away with planting the seeds of peach and get a pretty decent peach, but he's absolutely right on the apple.
All right. Joel wants to know about Crandall currants. He says they're easy to grow. They taste pretty good. The seeds are big and a bit, or hard and a bit big. What do you do with them? Do you know about Crandall currants?
I believe that's a black currant. And I think with most of the black currants, again, they're kind of processed and used in various maybe jams and things like that. You typically would not eat them just fresh.
Okay.
Well,
and
I'd sort of disagree with that one.
You do? Okay.
We really didn't have time earlier, but I think currants is another good choice for a small fruit. There's white currants, there's black currants, there's red currants. Especially with the black currants, you need to be careful that they're resistant to the white pine blister rust because it could kill your white pine trees. But I kind of like that almost citrusy, sourish taste sometimes that the currants have. And unlike the aronia, I'll eat my currants fresh.
All right. And Josh in Iowa City wants to know about the raisin tree Hovenia dulcis. He wants to know if that can be grown in Iowa. Do you know anything about that?
We're kind of looking at each other, and I
the
have no idea.
No,
I have
know.
No idea.
I've heard of it. I've never had any experience with it. Sometimes there's the hasberry or the blue honeysuckle that people eat. Sometimes they will call it like a raisin, but I think what he's talking about is different than the blue honeysuckle.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Bob is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Quick question about an apple tree. We have a fairly well-established older tree. I'm not sure what kind of apple it is, but it's a yellow, very light-skinned, thin-skinned, and we make a lot of applesauce out of it. It was a good year because the Japanese beetles came out earlier than normal, I think, or somewhere different in their schedule, and a lot of the apples made it through. We picked them all, and now we have little apples showing up again, a second round. And I'm not concerned about it other than, do I need to pick those off?
What you'll find is we had that spring freeze in April, and that killed off a good share of the bloom, but maybe not, especially if you're in an urban setting. And so you had your normal crop of apples. But what apple trees have a tendency to do is they'll have what's called residual bloom. They may bloom maybe a month, even 6 weeks later than what they normally do. And then occasionally some of those will set fruit as well. And so they're on a much more delayed schedule. So they're probably going to be smaller fruit even when they're mature, but you could plan on them being at least a month later than the regular apples.
Great. Okay. That sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. Next up, we've got Betty on the line in Carroll. Hello, Betty.
Hi. I have a question. It's not about fruit, but I saw this beautiful, striking red plant in the woods and wondered what it was, kind of asked around, looked it up on the internet, and it was called Jack in the Pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. And a couple days later, I went, and something had ate it off.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a deer, but they left a berry.
Okay.
So I picked up that berry, and then I pulled the stalk out. I didn't get the root, but I put it in water. I wondered if I could plant it.
Yes, you can.
I know it needs shade. Okay.
Right. Yeah, those cluster of berries will turn kind of a bright orangey red in late summer, early fall. And as soon mm-hmm. as they do, the critters find them, and they eat them. But if you can get them, what you can do is squeeze out the seeds. They're typically, I think, 2 to 5 seeds per berry. Squeeze those out, and then go ahead and plant those this fall. And
okay.
plant those maybe about 1/4 inch deep. You want to plant them in an area where the soil is moist, and hopefully they'll germinate this next year, next spring. But I would put them in a place that tends to be kind of moist. If you have a shady area, for example, maybe near a downspout on the house or garage, that would be a great place to put them.
Okay. Yeah, they were really pretty.
All right. Pretty. Thanks a lot for your call,
Betty.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Have a great day. Next up, let's go to Conway on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Conway.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about blueberry bushes. I purchased some blueberry bushes
three actually earlier this year, and I transplanted them, set them out in my yard, and two of them seem to be doing fair. One of them is dying, and I would like to know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, I would begin by saying that they have a very shallow fibrous root system. And when we have a prolonged dry period, they do have to be watered very regularly. And if they're not, they could basically decline and die. The other thing is they have two basic requirements, a well-drained soil. They do not do well in poorly drained sites. They also need an acid soil. And so if you didn't amend the soil when you planted those, what I would suggest is maybe every spring, maybe applying some ammonia sulfate around the plants. The ammonia, basically, the ammonium sulfate, the ammonia supplies nitrogen and the sulfate, the sulfur. And the sulfur helps to lower the pH. And that's critical because they prefer a pH around, 4.5 to 5. And our soil is typically around 7. So you do need to acidify the soil. But make sure that you keep on watering those into November if the weather stays dry this fall.
Okay, I have watered them regularly, but I use salt water from my house. Does that affect them?
I don't think it should because you're doing this more on an occasional basis. It's not like a houseplant where you'd use it all the time. So I don't think it should be a problem because of the natural rains that we do have tends to kind of flush it out. So
would that be well water or city water?
It's city water.
Yeah, so the pH of the water shouldn't be too bad. It might be beneficial if you could collect rainwater and water them with rainwater. But for the most part, the water should be okay.
Okay, and there's one mistake I made in transplanting them. That the instructions stated that I should flip this root package that, as I take them out of the pot, score it on the side where the roots would expand. I had already transplanted them before I read the instructions.
Okay.
Does that affect the survival of the plant?
Well, when you took those out of the container, did you find a mass of roots along the outer edge of the soil ball?
Yes, nothing unusual about it. It's just
okay.
the shape of the pot, the solid
right.
Clump of
we typically like to maybe take a knife and make four kind of half-inch deep cuts into the side of the soil ball to cut some of those circling roots so they don't keep on going in that circular pattern. And that way, that encourages them to grow outward when they grow back. But that shouldn't cause the plants to die that quickly. So there's something else going on. I'm not sure exactly what it is.
It's a sandy soil.
Okay. Well, in a sandy soil, make sure that you keep them well watered. I would say probably, this would be a guess, if it doesn't rain probably every week or so on a through the summer into fall.
Okay, Conway, good luck with that. I hope that turns around. And next up, let's go to Kyle on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Kyle.
Hi there. I have a question about what types of bushes you would suggest to plant on the north side of a north-facing house. And not really a green thumb, neither is my wife, but we're excited to give it a try, and something that would be about 4 to 5 feet tall.
Okay, and how close to the house?
I'd say anywhere from 2 to 4 feet away from the house.
Okay. Probably the best choice would be the yews or the taxus. They can be grown in full sun to heavy shade. They also tolerate pruning very well. So you can prune them and keep them to a certain size. There aren't too many shrubs that stay under 4 feet. So they would be my first choice, a yew or a taxus.
A yew or a taxus.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And any tidbits on what season to plant or how to make that transition into the soil a good one?
Well, I think at this point, I'd be inclined to wait and do it in the spring. They are an evergreen, and if you plant them this fall, they don't have much time to get reestablished. If we have a long, harsh winter, they may suffer. So I'd be inclined to wait and do it in the spring.
All right, Kyle, thanks a lot for your call. We have an email from Annie in Iowa City. She says, I'd like to sod my yard in the spring. Is there anything I should do now to prepare?
Well, what I would probably do is if you have some vegetation there currently, let's say weeds or whatever, I would go out there and at some point this fall destroy what's currently there, get rid of it, especially if you have some weeds, because if you have some things like quack grass or thistles, they can be hard to kill, and you want to get rid of those. So I would try to kill everything that you can, and so you have a nice seed bed or sod bed for next year. Also, if you've had some construction done where the house was built and maybe there's debris in the soil, go ahead and till it and take out any debris you find as far as rocks or bricks or whatever. And if you have really, really poor soil, let's say you have a lot of clay, maybe try to find some organic matter like compost, maybe a couple inches, and actually apply that and then incorporate that into the existing soil.
Okay, thanks a lot for that question. And we've got Judy on the line next from Winterset. Hello, Judy.
Good morning. I have a question about a prairie planting. We'd like to put in a plot of both prairie grasses and forbs. We will kill the existing vegetation this fall, and normally we would drill the seed in the fall, but because of the extreme drought and the fact that we don't have a nearby water supply, would it be better for us to wait until spring to plant the prairie seed and grasses?
Boy, a tough question. Even though it's kind of dry, I guess I would go ahead and do it this fall. You have the option. You could do it basically, I think, late next spring or this fall. I guess I'd go ahead and fall because as far as the forecast is concerned, who knows? And oftentimes you get pretty good results when you do it in the fall. So I guess I'd go ahead and fall in the fall and do it.
You'd still do it in the fall. Okay.
I think I would.
Well, and what has come before has no bearing on what may be coming in the next couple of months, right?
Right. So,
all right.
You might want to check with your NRCS office, too, your local county NRCS office, the USDA Service Center. Each county has one.
All right. Judy, thanks a lot for your call. And we have a follow-up question from Alicia in Ottumwa. What cultivar of pawpaw would you recommend, and where can they be purchased?
I think I mentioned some of the cultivars like Shenandoah and Susquehanna and Potomac already. NC1 would also be another good one. I can't really give a recommendation per company where to buy them, but I can say who has them. So I'm not recommending the companies.
Okay.
I'm just mentioning them. One possibility for some of those would be One Green World. It's a nursery out of the Oregon, Washington area. There's Forest Keeling Nursery down in Missouri has things like the Shenandoah. You may have to actually drive down there if you want to buy just a small amount. Otherwise, you can get them shipped.
Right. So you want to look around online probably and find different places that have them.
Yeah, but ideally you want to have grafted varieties that are going to do better for you.
All right. Patrick O'Malley, thank you very much. Patrick O'Malley of Iowa State University Extension and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension. Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
And thanks for coming to Iowa City. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt.